Hello and welcome to Global Research Unlocked, where we discuss what's rising from growth industries to rising risks and opportunities in global markets. I'm TJ Thornton, head of product marketing at BofA Global Research, and we're recording this episode on Thursday, March 28, 2024.
We see margins recovering first, then demand starts to recover, then operating leverage starts to kick in and margins improve even further. So that's the near-term boost that we could potentially see on margins. More medium to longer-term tailwind is really productivity. We talked about how productivity improved for the first time in 15 years. And that's really different from what we saw over the past 10, 15 years.
Over the longer term, earnings are the biggest determinant of stock performance. Multiples can only rise and fall so much. So when the US equity strategy team raised expectations for 2024 S&P earnings, looking for growth to be much better than in the average year, that was noteworthy, particularly since they see above average growth in 25 as well. Here to discuss what's driving that growth and risks to achieving it is Osung Kwon from the US equity and quant strategy team. Osung, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me today.
Okay, so I think it'd be useful to start with a short history of S&P earnings. U.S. GDP has been growing every year since the big drop in 2020, but S&P earnings shrunk in 2023 while GDP kept growing. What drove that decline in S&P earnings last year?
In 2023, we saw on earnings recession, at least in the first half of the year, when GDP was still growing above trend. And we see 2023 as more of a transition year when companies were adapting to a higher rate environment and the weakening demand environment. And I think there are really two reasons why we saw an earnings recession when GDP was still growing above trend. The first reason was because the cost structure was bloated. Companies overhired, overbuilt inventories during the upcycle in 2021. And when demand started weakening, they started seeing margins getting squeezed. It really seems like that part is taken care of now. We saw margins improving for the second straight quarter in Q4, even though demand was still pretty tepid, pointing to the cost-cutting efforts that these companies did. The second reason for the earnings recession was because of the shift that we saw from goods to services. Now, that matters because when it comes to earnings for the S&P, goods represent about 50% of earnings. But for the economy, goods are only about 20%. So the shift that we saw from goods to services, there was actually a tailwind for GDP, but it was a headwind for earnings. And we're starting to see lots of signs. These leading indicators are pointing that we are headed toward a manufacturing recovery cycle going forward. And in terms of manufacturing, we were in a recession. The PMI has been in contraction for the past 16 months, which is the third longest downturn in history. And as we come out of this manufacturing recession, we think that's going to drive better top line growth for a lot of companies, resulting in better earnings going forward.
Thanks, Osung. And we'll pick up on that point on manufacturing a little bit later. But I first wanted to talk about the growth that you're looking for in 2024. Does the pause in growth that we saw last year play much of a role in this expectation for growth this year? Essentially, we're starting from a lower base. How helpful is that for your 24 and 25 forecasts?
Comps obviously are a lot easier because EPS was in a recession, especially in the first half of the year. EPS actually went down by about 4% year over year in the first half. So at least in the first half of this year, we are up against a lot easier comp. So that's good news. And during that transition year in 2023, companies really started focusing on making their cost structure leaner. We saw margins improving for the second straight quarter, as we talked about. They started focusing on efficiency, productivity. We started seeing productivity improving for the first time in about 15 years. If you look at the revenue per worker for the S&P 500, and adjusted for inflation, we haven't really seen any productivity gains for the past 15 years. And now we're starting to see that after a very big stall in productivity. Those are all positive signs that make us comfortable with double-digit growth that we are forecasting this year and next.
Okay, and back to the point about potential manufacturing recovery. Remind us why manufacturing has been in a downturn and how helpful could a recovery be for S&P earnings?
A couple of reasons for that. First is the inventory destocking cycle that we saw. Obviously, that was caused by the shift that we saw from goods to services, as we talked about, but also companies overbuilt their inventories because of all these supply chain issues that we saw after COVID. Companies' inventories were a little bloated, and they obviously went through that destocking cycle, which caused the manufacturing recession. And the other reason is manufacturing is typically more cyclical, and they are typically more rate sensitive. So that was really the sector that got hit first versus the services sector, which is typically not as rate sensitive as the manufacturing sector.
We're talking about things that, whether it's commercial enterprises or consumers are buying, they're often using financing to buy them. And so that's resulting in kind of slower sales of whether it's a agricultural combine or a vehicle or an RV. That's the idea, right?
Exactly. And anything that's big ticket items where you need more financing than just cheaper items, you typically see a bigger impact and an earlier impact from a rate hiking cycle.
Got it. Okay. I want to talk about margins. There was this very unusual cycle after COVID. And in the 21-22 timeframe, S&P margins rose to all-time highs because you had this supercharged goods demand. You could get any pricing you wanted, but then margins have since fell off. Do you expect margins to go back to those very high levels that we saw in 21-22? And is that fair, given just how unusual that period was?
Yeah, that's essentially what we're calling for. In terms of the cyclical near-term tailwind, that's what we are seeing. Margins improved for the second straight quarter. And now we think the next leg of this earnings recovery will come from the top-line growth. And with top-line growth, we typically see operating leverage kicking in and margins improve even further. That's the typical cadence of earnings recovery. We see margins recovering first, then demand starts to recover, then operating leverage starts to kick in and margins improve even further. So that's the near-term boost that we could potentially see on margins. More medium to longer term tailwind is really productivity. We talked about how productivity improved for the first time in 15 years. And that's really different from what we saw over the past 10-15 years, when it was essentially the easiest credit conditions in history since the financial crisis, but we haven't really seen any productivity gains because what companies did was they essentially borrowed for free and they just bought back their shares rather than investing in CapEx to increase productivity. And if inflation is sub 2%, real GDP is sub 2%, and rates are zero, you don't really think about how do I improve productivity. You just buy back your shares. But if inflation is above 3%, real GDP is above 3%, and rates are at 5%, then you really start thinking about how do I make our company more efficient, more productive. And that's essentially what we saw over the past couple of years is companies started investing in CapEx. CapEx grew for the 10th straight quarter. And there's a very strong correlation between wage growth and productivity with a two-year lag. About 2 years after we see a wage growth, we typically see productivity start to move higher. And that happens because the labor market becomes very tight. Companies start automating things, investing in CapEx, and that's essentially what we saw. And that's essentially what we think is going to happen, leading to higher margins going forward.
Got it. Okay. I want to talk about some risks. One of them that people have cited is pricing. As we mentioned before, companies got a lot of pricing when goods demand was really strong, but now that has normalized and the consumer is perhaps less flush with things like stimulus cash and less able or willing to pay these prices. Is pricing a risk? Could pricing deteriorate? It seems like we are seeing some signs of that in places like used vehicles, in rents in certain parts of the country. Rents in certain parts of the country are falling because you've gotten some overbuilding. So is that a risk to your earnings call?
It could be in certain areas of the market. The good news is that rents and things like that, the services area where we started to see disinflation, that area isn't as big for earnings as we talked about earlier. And if you look at the goods side, the manufacturing side of the economy, pricing has already fallen quite a lot. We're talking about goods essentially in deflation over the past couple months. I don't think pricing will be a huge positive for the earnings recovery, but the good news is that it's probably at near troughs for a lot of companies. And think about trucking or transportation, where we're starting to see pricing moving out of essentially rock bottom prices, essentially break even costs. Well, I don't think it's a huge positive, but I don't think it will be a major headwind to earnings either. And as demand starts to recover, I think pricing should recover at least a little bit. That could be a little bit of tailwind to earnings going forward.
Okay, and CapEx is tied to earnings. You made the interesting point that CapEx this year is really going to be driven by mega cap tech. Actually, if you exclude those companies, there's not much CapEx growth. But I know you think that CapEx from mega cap tech into things like semiconductors and data centers is helpful for the economy as a whole. Could you go through that story and how helpful you think it is to S&P earnings?
What's interesting this year is that we are essentially going to see the opposite of what we saw last year in terms of who's investing in CapEx and who's not. Last year, if you look at the hyperscale, basically the big mega cap tech companies, they lowered their CapEx spend by about 7% year over year, whereas the other more old economy CapEx grew by about 9%. Consensus expects that we're going to see the opposite of what happened last year. The hyperscalers are expected to increase their CapEx by about 27% year over year, whereas the other old economy CapEx is expected to be largely flat. And that's okay because these hyperscalers, they are basically spending on AI data centers, which should help not only things like semis, hardware, and more tech gears, but we also started to hear that power is now the biggest constraint in building data centers. GPUs just need more power than regular CPUs, and these AI data centers need more GPUs, meaning they need more power. So that will lead to increased demand for electrification. That means more grid, more HVAC, more cooling systems. And these are massive construction projects that we're talking about. We need more construction equipment and ultimately more jobs. We think this AI investment cycle, which could be a multi-year AI investment cycle, and 2024 might be the first year of that cycle. And I think this creates a virtuous cycle for earnings and for the economy.
Okay, and at the top, I mentioned how you're looking for better than average growth in 25, a modest slowdown versus 24, which is meaningful because if this was the last big growth year, investors probably wouldn't want to put much of a multiple on earnings. But if it's going to last, then that's positive. What gives you conviction that we're going to continue to get this really good growth next year?
Forecasting this year is a really difficult process, but forecasting the out year is even more difficult. But I think next year could be a better macro backdrop for earnings than this year. If inflation continues to moderate, as our economists think, and we are well into an easing cycle by next year, housing markets should come back, things normalize from the COVID weirdness that we saw and the hiking cycle, I think next year could be a more stable environment. The demand recovery that we talked about earlier is probably going to start in Q2. We haven't really seen that in Q4 from earnings. Q4 earnings was really driven by margins. We haven't really seen a lot of data that points to demand acceleration in Q1 yet. But I think the demand recovery story is probably going to start in Q2 or maybe even the second half of the year. But if it really starts to ramp up in the second half of the year and into 2025, and I think that should really lead to better top line growth and better operating margin.
Okay. And I did want to talk about risks broadly to your forecast. We talked a little bit about pricing before, which you don't think is a big risk. Aside from recession, which of course is an obvious risk, what are the other things you're concerned about that you think might keep us from getting to your forecasts?
Yeah, you took away my easy answer. Recession, obviously. But I think it's really about how strong of a demand recovery that we're going to see. And I think this year is really going to be all about demand. There's only so much margin improvement that you can have by cutting costs and improving productivity. You got to have better demand to see the next leg of the earnings recovery. And we already saw 2 straight quarters of earnings recovery. So the next leg really has to come from better demand, a potential further slowdown in the US economy, or rates, the Fed turning hawkish even when the economy starts to slow down. Those are some of the risks that we could potentially see this year.
Got it. And the demand, of course, one of the sources could be Fed cuts, and many of those more rate sensitive areas start to see improved demand, whether it's housing or that RV that I'd love to buy, but have no time for.
Yeah, and I don't really think it's really about how many times the Fed is going to cut this year. I think it's really about how the first cut happens, whether it's proactive or reactive. If it's proactive, but the Fed really just cutting as an insurance, even though the economy is still very strong, then obviously it's positive for equities, positive for earnings. But if the Fed starts cutting, basically reacting to weakening data, then I don't necessarily think that will be bullish for equities or for earnings.
Okay, great. Thank you, Osong, for an excellent discussion.
Thank you.
The S&P 500 had a great year last year, rising nearly 25%. But S&P earnings were actually down. Megacap tech accounted for a lot of those S&P gains, and many of those stocks saw substantial earnings growth, explaining why they were able to perform so well. But we're looking for impressive growth in S&P earnings this year, and it's not just driven by a few tech stocks. We didn't have time to get into it here, but U.S. Strategy does expect the growth differentials between those tech winners and the rest of the market to narrow significantly this year. Reasons for improvement are numerous, everything from easy compares to margin expansion, labor productivity, to what should be improvement in demand, especially in the manufacturing side of the economy, which has been an extended downturn. Thanks for joining us today.
Bank of America and B of A Securities are the marketing names for the global banking businesses and global markets businesses, which includes B of A Global Research of Bank of America Corporation. Lending, derivatives, and other commercial banking activities are performed globally by banking affiliates of Bank of America Corporation, including Bank of America N.A., member FDIC. Securities, trading, research, strategic advisory, and other investment banking and markets activities are performed globally by affiliates of Bank of America Corporation, including in the United States, B of A Securities, Inc., a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC, and in other jurisdictions by locally registered entities. Copyright 2024 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.